The following programming is sponsored by Pete Trabuco. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
And welcome to another edition of Live on Tape with Pete Trabuco here at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group radio station. Happy Saturday afternoon to all of you out there. And of course, this is only 5 days from Thanksgiving. So it's coming up on us really, really quick. And you know, every year I get a call from MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, or one of the major cable stations about, well, what's the worst time to travel for Thanksgiving? Because it is the number one travel day is going to be the Thanksgiving era. So according to the AAA or the AAA, 80 million Americans are going to be traveling this coming week. Now, that's a lot. That's actually above 17% of what the what it was last year in 2023. So we're talking about 80 million people trying to get from point A to point B. So here's some of the things I wanted to talk to you about. And of course, that is what's the best day to travel? Now, what's the best day to do it? Well, here it is. Okay. The actual best day is going to be on Thanksgiving Day. Now, if you get an early flight, you can make it to wherever you want to go by dinner usually, and that's probably the best day. Now, the second best day is actually today, this Saturday, today, because that's one of the better days. And if not, Monday, the Monday before. Now, the worst days is going to be, of course, Tuesday and Wednesday, okay, of this next coming week. So don't fly on Tuesday or Wednesday. Please, if you're going to do it today after you listen to my show, right? What do you think, Tyler? You think they should do that?
To be fair, who could have guessed that a day or 2 days before Thanksgiving is going to be the worst day to take air travel?
It's true. It is absolutely true. I mean, 80 million Americans. Okay, and that's a lot of people flying. So it's 17% better than last year. And again, if you want to leave on Saturday, it's the second best day. If you want to leave on Monday, this coming Monday, 2 days from today, that's also a pretty good time. But I'm telling you, you better get going because it really is going to be a fiasco. I did that once, and I would never do that again. So I'm here live on tape. We are a beautiful Saturday afternoon with Tyler Conklin, of course, as my producer. Does a fantastic job. And I put a lot of strain and stress on him because last minute I give him stuff, and he's like, yeah, I can do it. Yeah, but thank you, Tyler, for being so flexible. We do appreciate that.
Hey, we were able to get you in, so we should be all good there. Okay. But what do we have on the docket for today?
Oh, my goodness, do we have a fantastic guest, okay? We have an Olympian. You must have watched the Paris Olympics. I mean, that was just amazing. I watched the whole thing. It was just incredible. I wait 4 years to see the Olympics. Well, we have got an incredible Olympian athlete, and that would be Obi Amachi. Okay, she is a Nigerian-American Olympian discus thrower from, of course, she lives in the United States now, but she has, she was actually representing the Nigerian team there, and she did absolutely fantastic there. I saw her on television. We waited to see her, myself and my wife, but she is actually here. And Obi, we are so glad that you are here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just looking at your resume over here, okay? Not only did you compete in the 2024 Olympics in Paris, which we're going to talk about because I wanted to be there. That was actually amazing. You also won the African Games, and in addition to that, two-time All-American and Ivy League record holder over at Princeton, the Princeton Tigers, right here, not far from the Philadelphia studios, and also a bronze medalist in the Commonwealth Games in, I think that's Birmingham. And it's incredible. When did you know that you were going to be an athlete, and how'd you get into discus, of all things?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I think I've always been a pretty athletic kid. I played every sport. I started off playing kickball as an elementary school student. Eventually, when I went to middle school, that's when I started playing formal sports. I played volleyball, I played softball, basketball, but track and field really had my heart, and it was something that I started doing after I was encouraged by my PE teacher, actually.
Okay.
In terms of track and field and like getting into the discus, I actually started track and field as a sprinter and a high jumper. So it really wasn't until 4 years later, once I started high school, which is when I started throwing the discus. I had one of my coaches just recommend me. He said, hey, you look powerful and explosive. Like, why not try the discus and the other throwing events, the shot put? So initially, I really wasn't interested. It wasn't a sport that I saw many girls competing in.
Uh-huh.
But I tried it, and I had a fantastic time. And I ended up continuing with it alongside doing the sprinting and the jumping events as well.
Wow, that's amazing. So you started out as a shot putter, and you moved over to discus. What was the reason why you did that? I mean, is it easier to throw a disc as opposed to a shot put, or was it less competition? I think you just said that, but I'm just repeating it.
Yeah, no. So I started off as a sprinter. I did the 100 meter, the 200 meter, and the relays.
Okay.
I also high jumped. And once I started throwing, I threw both the shot put and the discus. I never actually formally switched and just competed in the throwing events. That wasn't until college. But for the most part in high school, I kind of did everything. I did the throws, I jumped, and I also sprinted. So it was a lot balancing all of those different events. And eventually when I went to college and joined my college team, that was when I specialized in just through the discus along with shot put. I ended up dropping shot put along the way.
Sure.
And just doing discus. But if I had to choose, honestly, discus, I feel like is my more favorite event. I don't like how heavy the shot put is.
Yeah.
Really. But discus definitely has my heart.
Well, Obi, I got to admit that just the fact that you went to Princeton University puts you above most of us, us normal people here. You went to Princeton, you ended up going to a fantastic school, not too far from where we are in Philly. In fact, a lot of people I know have gone to Princeton. But that must have been great. They must have been really happy to get you, because I know that you're a two-time All-American Ivy League record holder in the woman's discus there. How did that come about? How did you get into Princeton University? How did that happen?
That's another good question. So I was actually born and raised in California, and there's so many great schools in California. And honestly, myself, I thought I would stay in California for school. That was actually the plan. But one of my coaches, my Princeton coach, who recruited me for Princeton,
uh-huh.
He actually was the Stanford coach and was recruiting me for Stanford. So Stanford was my dream school.
Okay.
There's also a lot of other great California schools. The coach from Stanford, she actually moved to Princeton.
Oh.
And that was when I developed an interest in a school that was outside of California. And it was really because of her that I took a visit out to Princeton and saw the school and really liked it for what it was. It's a great school. The team was also very great. So I think that's what kind of changed my mind about leaving California, because otherwise I definitely would have stayed in California and just went to any of the other schools there. There's a lot of options there.
Oh, sure. In fact, you're out of San Francisco, I believe. Is that where you were? Fantastic. I've gone there many, many times. I love the Golden Gate Bridge, and I love the city. It's just an amazing place to go to. And you probably would have done just as well there. But Princeton, man, they must have been like salivating. Wow, you know, we're going to get Obi over here. And the coach obviously loved you as well. Two-time All-American Ivy League record holder. Just absolutely amazing. And I'm sure your grades were pretty darn good, too, as well.
Yeah, no, academics and just like education as a whole is something my family really prioritizes. And okay. As a high school student, I was a very good student. I did really well in school. I also had passions for sports and volunteering. So really, honestly, Princeton was a great fit. And being able to do all those things while I was there, I got to really focus on my academics. I got to do research in South Africa.
Okay.
I also got to do quite a bit of volunteering with younger students, which is something that I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that, because it's not just being an Olympian. You're giving back as well, and I'm really happy about that. Now, did you leave your family? I mean, when you went to California and you were living in San Francisco, in order to come to Princeton here in New Jersey, did you leave your family, and have they moved, or you go back from time to time?
Yeah, so I had to move from California, and I chose to stay in the East Coast after graduating. Like, I work in Princeton, so
yeah.
I ended up having to stay, but I do go back home from time to time, especially during the holidays. So I'll be back in town for Thanksgiving, and I'll be back for Christmas. So, yeah, my family still is in California.
Well, that's good. Do they obviously now? Let's talk real briefly about this, and then we'll get into the Olympics. Did they come see you in college when you were competing and doing all these fantastic things with discus throw? Did they ever come down to see you? I know they did probably for the Olympics, but did they come and see you when you were in college?
Yeah, my family came down to visit. I also had my high school coaches also as well, who also would come down to watch me compete. We're also very close, and they kind of make up my like larger extended family in a way. So they definitely come to watch me. Whenever I have competitions that are in the local area, they'll also come down to watch as well. So it's a really tight-knit community, especially within the track and field world. There's so many familiar faces, and you just really keep in touch with a lot of the same people that you've known since you were in your younger years, really,
yeah.
Because the sport is such a – it's a tight-knit, close community.
It is. I'm looking at, I guess, some of the things that you've accomplished in addition to that. I think your best was, what, 63 meters or 203
yeah.
feet? That was probably pretty yeah. cool. I mean, I can't even throw half that, you know, with a baseball or a golf ball. And you ended up going that far. What was that like when you did your personal best?
Yeah, so that was a long time coming. I think every elite thrower's dream is to break the 60 meter mark.
Uh-huh.
And it was something that I had to wait a long time for, especially halfway through my college experience, the pandemic happened. So I lost 2 years of training.
Oh.
And once I left college, I had to kind of relearn how to throw because of all the time that I had lost. And then once I finally finished school, there was also the transition of going from being a college athlete to being an athlete that's on their own. I'm unattached to a school, unattached
sure.
to a team. You're kind of just training on your own with your coach. So really it has all been like a long time coming, especially with injuries and just the many different life transitions that come along with this journey. So it was honestly just such a blessing and like a long time coming. It's really, really great to be able to see like the fruit of all the labor and time that you put into this, because it's not every day that you see an outcome despite how much training you're doing. So when it does happen, it's really, really exciting.
So give me a typical day when you're actually training here. We got about 2 minutes before break. Tell me, what's your day like? How much are you training? How many hours do you train? I know you've got a full-time job and you got to somehow mm-hmm. get that in there. So hours-wise, training-wise, approximately how many hours would you be training on a daily basis?
So it depends on what day it is. So I can walk you through my typical schedule.
Sure.
So I'll probably wake up at around 6:30. I'm out the door by 7. I'm on the track by around 7:15, and I will be throwing until 8:30. I book it back to my place, and I get to work on time by around 9 or 9:30. And right after work, I have my second workout. So in the morning, I throw. That's usually how it works. In the evening is when I do my lifting routine.
Uh-huh.
So right after work, I'll drive to the gym and I will get a lift in. That will usually take 2 hours to do. You want to take your time with that because you don't want to cause an injury. So you do want to take your time with stretching, rolling, any like PT type things that you need to do. And really, that's how my day looks like. I'll throw maybe 4 to 5 times a week and I lift 3 times a week.
Wow.
So that's my usual routine. It's just a matter of moving things around to account for work. Like some days you'll have to start earlier or you'll have to end later. So it's about kind of being able to be reactive and adjust your schedule as things come up, but also just like finding whatever pockets you can to just get the things that you need to get done.
Wow.
So I think really that college has really kind of prepared me in a way, because you had to balance traveling and training with like academics and schoolwork. So it kind of translates over into my work life.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I stopped at 6:30 in the morning. I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm done. That's it. No, no, I'm done. 6:30 in the morning. Forget about it. Okay, folks. Well, we're going to be back with Obi, an Olympic athlete. You just love her, man. We're going to be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Women Heart is in a race to save lives. Heart disease is the number one killer of women. It's 80% preventable if you know the facts. Millions of women are living with or at risk of heart disease. Get educated. See your doctor. Know the facts. To win this race, we all have to do it together. Our hearts beat as one. To learn more, visit womenheart.org.
Again, Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco here at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group station. Hello out there, along with Tyler Conklin. We just have an amazing guest. You know, I don't have Olympic athletes on this show. I had one about a year ago, I guess, and that was from a gal, Katarina Lindquist. She was a tennis player. She was number 10 in the world back in 85. Well, back in 86 and 87 and so on down the line, she competed in two Olympics with the Swedish team. And I asked her the question about what it's like to be, you know, walking in into the stadium and seeing everybody and just experiencing what it's like to be an Olympian. And she told me it was an amazing experience and it was fantastic. But with us today, we have another Olympian, a world record holder, actually, when it comes to two-time All-American Ivy League record holder from Princeton Tigers, but also an Olympian in these last Paris Olympics. And that would be Obi Amerchi. And she is with us today. So now let's talk about the Olympics. Okay, you did so much with Princeton. We love that. You did so much with winning all these different games, bronze medalist, Commonwealth Games. And then, of course, the African Games, gold medal there. Now, all of a sudden, guess what? You are going to the Olympics. What was that like, Obi, when you got the call saying you're going? Oh, by the way, you did go with Nigeria, the Nigerian team. Yeah. Okay, but what was that like?
Oh, it was honestly... to find out that I'm going to the Olympics honestly was a dream come true. Now, the process of getting to that moment was definitely a very humbling, a very stressful, a very just trying time. Just seeing there's a live list online that everyone watches just to know like where they're ranked and whether they'll be able to make it to the Olympics. So just like quickly how the Olympic qualification process works.
Uh-huh.
For my event, the top two women in the world will be able to go, and that's based on your world ranking.
Okay.
Your world ranking is going to be based on the number of points that you have, and it's all, and which is pretty much based on how far you throw and how often you're winning competitions, and that accumulates all into like a point value and your world ranking. So just the process of competing this year, making some large jumps in my performance and battling different injuries, it was just such a roller coaster and very humbling experience of having to be very patient with the process and just really just trusting that things would work out. So just getting that call that day and knowing that I indeed was going to the Olympics, it was just such a dream come true, such a blessing. And I'm so grateful that I was able to really like see everything through in the end.
That's amazing. So now let's talk about Paris. I mean, you're on the boats and normally they actually go in into the stadium, which is pretty cool. Yeah. I think that's pretty cool. But what was that like actually coming in on the boat? Everybody did. They came in on the boats and I saw you. I saw you there. So what was that like? That was so different. What was that experience like coming in?
It was different. It was wonderful. I love that they were trying to do something new with this upcoming Olympics. I loved it. being on the boat, it was really exciting. We were on the boat next to Niger, the country. And that was really fun, just being able to meet athletes from different countries, being able to just celebrate with your teammates, looking out across the water. There were so many people, like in chairs, crowds of people just cheering us on. You could see houses, windows open, just like families like waving from their windows and their apartment buildings. Everyone was just so happy. It was such a great atmosphere and a great moment to be in. It was just very exciting. It rained so hard, but no one cared. No one cared because we were all just so excited to be there. And that's how you can tell that the energy was just very high in that moment.
Yeah, I was watching the Olympics. I'm thinking, I went to my wife and, you know, my wife says, you know, because she knows you, obviously, and you work together. But she's like, is it raining? I said, I think it's raining pretty hard. And people are getting soaked over here. And you wouldn't know that they would, because I tell you, the adrenaline level was so high with you all that basically you're just having a blast. That must have been cool, looking around and seeing people wave at you and say hello. And I'm sure you had a little bubbly over there, too, as well. I'm hoping you had a little bubbly while you were going down, down the river. When that must have been Did you take a lot of pictures?
A lot of pictures, so many.
Yeah. Now, how many people were on the Nigerian team?
I would say, if I'm remembering correctly, I believe we have between 80 and 90 athletes that were on the Nigerian team for this Olympics.
Wow. Now, you have dual citizenship, right? And that's how you were able to get that. Yeah, my daughter wants to get dual citizenship too. I'm from Italy, and she'd like to do that. Mm-hmm. What was that procedure? How long did that take to get the dual? Was it easy, or did you have to, you know, walk through walls to get through the red tape?
No, it was actually very easy. I think Nigeria gives they give citizenship to anyone with parents that were born in Nigeria. So it's really a simple process of just signing up for your Nigerian passport and just showing proof of your parents and where they were born.
Okay, so while you were there, okay, you went to the village, the Olympic Village. What was that like? Because again, these are things that I could only imagine what it would be like. Obviously, walking into the stadium or on a boat, basically seeing all those people, and you know, just the fireworks, and I tell you, the opening with the Eiffel Tower, and Celine Dion singing and all that stuff. That was just amazing. Yeah. So, what was the Olympic Village like?
Yeah, the Olympic Village, I don't know what I expected going in. Maybe I thought it would be a little bit like intimidating of an environment, but it was exactly the opposite. There was so much camaraderie. It was a positive environment. People were just really excited to be there, for one. And two, people were very friendly, just excited to meet people from different countries. I think that was a big part of it. There's actually this tradition that they have at international competitions where most teams are supplied with some pins. Usually just a pin with their team or their country's emblem on it. And they'll go around trading pins with different countries. So that was kind of like a fun game, or like just something a lot of athletes like participated in, just trading pins. So you'd go up to a random team and just like ask, hey, can you trade pins?
That is cool. Now, you had competition there, okay? You had people that basically you probably were in awe of. I mean, I would be if I was like, wow, look who this person is. He's a 2-time gold medalist or something along those lines. Did you have that starstruck feeling when you were with some of these people and thinking, oh my goodness, look who I'm talking with. Look who I'm with.
Yeah.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah. No, I definitely had two of those. I had that moment twice. Like going into the Olympics, some of the people that I wanted to meet were people that I knew I couldn't possibly meet because they retired from the sport.
Uh-huh.
But what are the odds? I actually got to meet two really special people. I ran into Serena Williams in the village.
Oh, wow.
And I also ran into Allison Felix, who's another like really great track and field athlete.
Sure.
So those were two women who they're not currently doing the sport anymore. They've retired, but it was just so great being able to meet them because these are people that I definitely looked up to, like as I started doing athletics in general.
What was Serena like when you met her?
Very kind. She was with her family as well. Just very kind, very approachable.
No, I agree
Allison
with you.
Felix
yeah.
as well.
What was that?
Allison Felix as well is very kind. I actually saw her on the morning of my competition, and she wished me good luck and just asked me how I felt about competing.
Wow.
So it was just really nice beating them both.
Did you get their autograph, or you don't do that type of stuff because you're an athlete yourself? Me, I probably would have got the autograph, you know, like, okay, you know, just make it out to me. You know what I mean? I'm sure you didn't do that, but yeah. Did you want to do that?
I didn't do autographs, but I did take a picture, and I gave Serena a pin. That's something we do. We give pins.
Sounds good. Sounds good. You know, believe it or not, my family has met Serena. My daughter was actually at one of these tournaments, and this was basically one of these local tournaments. You know, where they play like different teams from different cities. And we went to one of them, and all the kids were allowed to go to, you know, get an autograph from Serena, you know, get their tennis ball signed. And of course, my daughter was there. And the cool part, if you listen, people, if you ever want to get an autograph from Serena Williams, this is what you do. This is how you do it. Everybody came in and they said, can you sign my tennis ball? And they signed a tennis ball and they signed it. So Serena signed it, gave a smile in the whole nine yards. Well, my daughter didn't say, can you sign my tennis ball? She noticed that Serena had really nice, a nail polish on. So she commented, she goes, oh, your nail polish is beautiful. You know, they spent like 5 minutes talking about nail polish while everybody else was waiting online. She got like an interview with Serena talking about nail polish. So that's the question you have to ask, folks. If you ever see Serena, ask her about her nail polish, and I think you'll do pretty well. But like you said, she is just down to earth. She's just an amazing woman, has accomplished so much. You know, I don't think anyone's going to come close to, you know, the 23, Grand Slams that she has. That was pretty cool as well. So now I want to go into training. We talked originally about the training, but I want to talk about What are the specifics? I know when I watch shot putters and I watch discus throwers, I notice you spin, you know, to get the centrifugal force going, basically.
Yeah.
And then you let go at a certain point and you hope for the best at that point. And if you foul, which I think you did one time over in the Olympics, and you know, when you go over, because, you know, the force of you turning around basically is going to be in that respect. How long does it take to get the technique out, and who taught you how to do that?
Yeah, so a lot of questions there. I'd say to start with who taught me how to do this, I'll start with my high school coaches, because really they are my base and foundation and like really, really strong supporters of mine. So my coach is Patrick Doherty.
Okay.
Kevin Patrick Doherty, Jerry Woods, Colin Liu. I've had so many people that served as my coaches growing up. They've all kind of put in a team effort with coaching me and teaching me this technique, because it's not really something that's easy to get right away. There's hours and hundreds of repetitions of doing something over time. And every year you just kind of get better and better. And I think the older you get, the more bodily awareness you get and you understand about your technique, you feel different things. You have more awareness of your body, where it is, how it's moving, and that really just kind of like improves your form. Along with that, in terms of training, this is a very explosive sport. It's really not simply having strong arms per se. It's really your legs, I would say, honestly. I think it really starts with generally being strong, and a lot of that is achieved by weight training, which is why weightlifting is such an important aspect of the training for the sport. And along with that, just like we were talking about, is like your technique. It's not something that you can just muscle and like throw something very far. It's a very, very technical sport. And putting in those hours and repetitions for several years is really what's going to get your technique where it needs to be able to throw those greater distances.
And I would imagine also centrifugal force, obviously, for yourself, because you're spinning around and you got to spin around several times. And then when you let go, you also had to stay in bounds, which can probably be an issue, you know, because, I mean, you're just moving so quickly that's got to be an issue as well, to make sure that not only after you made the throw, and you can make a fantastic throw, that you stay in bounds, because if you're not, unfortunately, that throw will not count. So that is probably an effort too as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what you said.
Like I said, I sound like a pro over here, Obi, but I don't know anything, okay? But I sound like a pro, so that's pretty good. Anyway, so we are talking with an amazing woman, and we'll be back with Live on Tape, and an Olympian. We'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit LifeVac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Hi, I'm Dr. Anita Chandra with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Recent cases of measles in the United States have caused serious illness and have many parents concerned. This virus is incredibly contagious. If your child is not vaccinated, they're likely to get the measles if they're exposed. The good news is the measles vaccine is very safe and effective. Remember, the best way to protect your children, your family, and your community is to be immunized. If you have questions, talk with your pediatrician or visit healthychildren.org.
Hello, everybody. Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco on a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Just 5 days from Thanksgiving and the turkey. And, of course, the football games, obviously. And I can almost guarantee you that Detroit will be there and Dallas will be there because every single year they seem to always get those Thursday games going. We are with Olympic athlete, just an amazing woman. And we got Obi Amechi. He's here today. And she actually not only competed in the Paris Olympics in discus throw, but also a graduate from Princeton University, two-time All-American, and Ivy League record holder in women's discus, as well as a bronze medalist in the Commonwealth Games. And, of course, I think gold medal in the African Games. And just amazing to have her in here talking. Now before the break, I was talking like I knew what I was doing. You know, I'm saying, well, you got to do this and that. And I know, Obi, you started laughing at me. So, Obi, do you think I make a good coach? I mean, I definitely wouldn't be a good athlete, but could I be a good coach from what I sort of know?
I think you could be a good coach.
I think I would try to be a good coach. Obviously, if I threw the discus, several things are going to happen. Number one, I'm going to spin around and throw the discus the wrong way. It's going to go at the at the people. Number two, I'm going to trip over the little piece of wood that's there. I'm going to fall down, mess my knee up, okay? And they're going to have to get traction to get me from the Olympic Games into an ambulance, okay? So that's probably what would happen with me. And of course, then there'll be a suit because I threw the discus the wrong way and I must hit the judges. Okay. So I probably would never be asked to go back again, but it's just amazing. Again, I had dreams of actually being in the Olympics, but, and I did play professional baseball. And I also did, well, with the Mets, and I was involved with that. And I also played college and tennis, and I still play pretty decently, but I never made it to the level that you have made it in the Olympics. It just must have been an inspiring experience. Now, are you going back? Are you going to do this again in 4 years?
That's a good question. I think for now, that is the plan. There's so many different, before the next Olympics, there's actually so many different competitions that happen before then. For example, in 2025, there's going to be the World Championships held in Tokyo. So that's a big track and field event.
Okay.
After that, I believe in 2026, there's going to be the Commonwealth Games. Not exactly sure where that will be held. And I think the next year after that, there should be another World Championships.
That's right.
So there's so many different competitions that happen before the Olympics. So there's so many things to look forward to. I'm excited for all of that. I really think that this experience has really taught me of what I'm capable of. And it just shows me like how much more there is to do, really. So I'm just excited to work towards those different things and to really tap into all that I've learned throughout this year.
Well, good for you. In fact, you mentioned the Commonwealth Games. You got the bronze medalist. So that's pretty impressive that you actually are going to be competing again. Again, like I said, if I didn't have to get up at 6:30 in the morning and do 3 hours of disc throwing, you know, and then basically end up doing the weight training later on, you know, I would do this too. You know what I mean? But you'd have to pull those things out. I would just show up. I don't think I'll do very well by doing that. Let's get into the weight training. Now, what type of weight training? Is it heavy weights? Is it repetition? And how do you do that? Because, again, you can't do weight training every day because your muscles will ache.
Yeah.
So what's the agenda on that? And what do you do, light weights or heavy weights or whatever?
this is a great question. I love talking about weightlifting. It's actually something I really love to do. Like in a different life, I think if I wasn't doing track and field, I probably would be doing Olympic lifts because it's something that my high school coach actually, he kind of doubled as the track and field coach and the weightlifting team.
Uh-huh.
So everyone who did a sport at my high school had to learn how to weightlift, Olympic style weightlifting. We had to learn it as part of training for the rest of your sport. So it's just like a really great skill that I've been able to carry out for the rest of my life. But in terms of what I do, throughout the week, depending on what day it is, you'll have three different lifts. One day of lifting is going to be more focused on your lower body. So you'll be doing like a back squat or like a single leg squat. You'll also be doing like a clean. Another day you might be doing jerks or bench presses. And then another day is more of like it's a more relaxed day. It's more like an athlete day. You're still lifting weights, but might be some squats or a clean, but something more light, and more like hurdle and plyometric work. But all of this is really, really heavy. So it's the kind of thing that you really have to fully commit to. It's not something you could go into and like kind of like, not put your full effort into because the weights are very heavy. So you really have to be ready. You really have to warm up. You have to mentally be focused because if you were to miss one of your lifts, you could really hurt yourself because the weight, it's a lot of weight.
Well, that's the other thing I want to talk about. Obviously, now I did play college ball. I played college baseball, college tennis, and college football. And now I'm older. I'm really like all those injuries, you know.
Yeah.
Now that's got to be something in the back of your mind, especially when you're training injury-wise, what you do there, and that's a conscious thing. If you do have an injury, obviously you've got to stop what you're doing and heal. And has anything like ever happened to you where you're like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to come back from this. I mean, this seems to be pretty serious.
Yeah.
Did that ever happen to you?
Yeah, I actually had that happen very recently. So actually this year in May, like while I'm still like trying to qualify for the Olympics, I actually tore a ligament in my wrist.
And oh no.
This is the wrist that I need to throw. So when that happened, it was kind of like very stressful. I went through a whole scare, had to get an MRI to figure out did I tear it or is it a strain. Turns out I tore it. So
this
kind of changes how I approach things. So I really have to just back off from some of the things I do. Like it was really just figuring out, not focusing on what I can't do and figuring out what I can do, because I could still use my legs, which means that I could do footwork and drills that use my legs to like, to practice the form and technique with throws, but I had to back off on actually releasing things with my wrist.
Oh my goodness.
I also had to figure out what lifts, like instead of like using free weights, like maybe I could use the machines and I could do, some like leg pulls or like things like that, leg presses, exercises that don't require me to actually use my wrist. So it was really just about figuring out what I could do in that moment, because it was a very high stakes moment where I did have to train, but it was how can I train without making things worse? And that's really how you have to approach things in moments like those.
And this is right before the Olympics, not too far away where the Olympics were coming. My goodness, that must have been pretty scary. And you still made it. You still ended up doing it, which is pretty incredible, the fact that you were injured. How long did it take to heal?
I think it probably took a good 3 months for me to start feeling more comfortable.
Wow.
Yeah. So up until the end of my season leading up to the Olympics.
And that's a testament to your ability to actually continue doing that. I've had injuries, too, from playing sports and everything. And I'll tell you, sometimes, even now when I play tennis, my knee might go out, you know, and I still play pretty competitive tennis. And I always wonder to myself, am I ever going to get back? You know, it's like every time you get an injury, you're like, am I ever going to get back to 100%? And it's always a thing that I always talk with athletes. I've had a lot of athletes on this show. You know, football, baseball, tennis, hockey, and so on down the line. And I can tell you, they have the same issues. They're like, I hope I can come back from this. It's got to be something that you think about pretty well. All right, so now, I also heard that you're the first in your family to go to college. Is that true?
Yeah, so my father didn't go to college, and my siblings were, all of us, I would consider as first-generation college students because we're the first to go a generation before us. My grandfather was a bread maker, and not all of them went to school. It wasn't something that was available to them. So going to college wasn't something that they had as an option for them. It was more so making ends meet.
Okay. Well, I tell you something. Obi, if you're going to go to college, folks out there, if you're going to go to college, go to Princeton University as opposed to a community college or, you know, the college I went to, which was Fail State University. Just kidding. Okay. But that's pretty impressive that the first college is going to be Princeton University. So anything on the horizon that you're going to be doing for training wise now? I mean, are you still doing that rigorous schedule, or do you take any time off from now just for a little bit, or is it just okay? Olympics are over, got competitions coming up. Keep the momentum going and continue doing without any stoppage at all. Are you still doing all that stuff? 6:30 in the morning and so on down all the way to the nighttime.
That's a good question. I think that balance in life is really important. I think that having a life outside of sports and having a job, just something else to focus on, really makes me be a better athlete. I think so. And I think that because there's less pressure and I don't base my identity on being just an athlete. There's other parts to me. So with that in mind, I actually took a 3-month break after the Olympics because I'm human. I was tired. I was tired from just all of like the strict schedules and the traveling and the competing and the worrying about what's my ranking and all of that like stress like involved with sports. So I took that break and I think I really needed it and I enjoyed it. Just was able to focus on the other aspects of my life, like friends, family, just hanging out, sleeping in, just being unstructured. And I think that was really good for me. So now when I'm going back into this more like strict schedule, I'm okay with it because I've had the time to just do whatever I want. So I think it's just a healthier way to approach things, is just finding times to be unstructured, like just taking a break from everything being structured and disciplined and rigorous. Like you need to take a step back and have a break once in a while. It just helps you to be able to be more productive when you need to.
Well, that's good to know. I would think you would need a break, especially after the Olympics. I mean, that's got to be such a high. You know, I don't even know if I'd come down, basically, from that. I'd be like, I was in the Olympics. I would actually get a shirt that says, I was in the Olympics. And I'd walk around, and everybody I'd meet, hi, how you doing? Pete Tribuco here. I was in the Olympics. Okay, I was in Paris, all right? Do you see me on television? I would do that all the time, okay? I even have a shirt here. And I'm not wearing it today. Tyler can tell you about it, my producer. I have a shirt. This is Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco. It's a picture of me, okay? Now, my daughter, Jennifer, gave that to me. But every once in a while, I will pull that out and say, I got a radio show in Philadelphia. Aren't I cool? But that would be absolutely amazing. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFE-VAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer may be yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental disorder that requires a comprehensive approach to treatment. Learn more at moretoadhd.com. This message brought to you in partnership with ADDA, ACO, and CHAD.
Welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia. All my Philadelphians out there, we are just amazed. It's only 5 days till Thanksgiving. And then after that, oh my goodness, then we got Christmas coming. So I don't know about you, Tyler, but I'm trying to get all my presents together, or at least trying to get them together. I don't know if you've even started yet at this point.
Well, we did discuss it last week or whatever, I'm pretty sure. So, you know, I already have my ones picked out for like two of my numbers, but I still got to grab at least four or five more to get it properly set up for Christmas.
That's true. In fact, 10% of everybody out in the United States has already got all their presents done by Thanksgiving. So I'm well behind the schedule there. Oh, we have an amazing guest, and I know, Tyler, you've been listening and saying, you know, Tyler, do you think you could be an Olympic athlete? Do you think you could do it?
I am 212 pounds, and I'm 5'6". There's no way I'm an Olympic athlete in anything.
What do you think, Obi? You think he could be an athlete? What do you think? You think he could do that?
I think there's a sport for everyone. I do. I truly do.
This is true. You know, I'm looking at curling in the Winter Olympics. You know, I could do the curling part. Okay, that seems to be pretty easy, okay? You just slide on the ice. And you hold this curl, and you try to get it to the right angle. So I think, Obi, this is probably the only sport that I can actually do. I wanted to do speed skating. You know, I wanted to do biking. You know, I wanted to do stuff like that. But I think I could do it. I think I could do, you know, I don't know, you know, basically getting that curling done. So for those of you just joining us, we are with Olympic athlete Obi Amichi, and she is just an amazing person. Bronze medalist in the Commonwealth Games, gold medalist in the African Games, and of course, in Paris. We all watched the Olympics this year. It was amazing, and she represented the Nigerian team. She is a Nigerian-American, went to Princeton University, two-time American, or in this case, American and Ivy League record holder, and she got to see the Eiffel Tower. She got to hang out with all these cool people at the Olympics, and she's with us today. So, you know, I tell you, you're just an amazing person. On top of that, you have a full-time job, and on top of that, you seem to be always busy out there. So now, here comes the question. I always ask professional people that are really successful, whatever sport they're in, or you know, I've had astronauts on, I always ask the same question I'm going to ask you now. We got a lot of Philadelphians out there who are dreaming to be like you, to make the Olympics somehow, some way, okay? What advice would you give somebody who's maybe in high school or maybe in college and they're playing for a pretty decent team or doing something in track and field? And what advice can you get them to get to the next level, to get to the level where, like you, they are invited to the Olympics?
That's a really great question. I think the first piece of advice I would give to somebody is to enjoy what you do. I think I wouldn't be here unless I enjoyed what I do. And it's not to say that I like waking up early or that I like training in 33 degree weather, because I hate that. I actually hate that. But I do love the sport, and I get joy from participating in the sport, meeting new people, building relationships with athletes around the world. Like, that brings me joy, so it doesn't feel like work. Like, it's work doing the training, but I enjoy the sport, so it's worth it for me. I think a lot of times people want to have success, but sometimes they want success in areas that don't actually bring them joy, so it's not an easy process to get through. So I think my first piece of advice is to be able to pick something that you find joy in, because I think it makes the process of achieving success at a high level within that area so much easier. The second piece of advice that I would give to somebody is to get a support system, like a strong community that will support you and push you to dream big. I think a lot of my success is due to the people I had around me. Like, my high school coaches are my foundation, really. These people have advocated for me. They have helped me get into competitions that I didn't know existed. They encouraged me to apply to colleges that I didn't even think I was qualified to be at. So honestly, a lot of my success can be tied to the people that I gratefully had around me. So I think finding a community of people that can cheer you on and see your potential before you even see it yourself, I think those two things are what's most important for getting to a high level, whether that's in sport or in other areas of your life.
I think it's also about mindset too as well. I noticed that when, you know, the athletes are great, but the really good athletes are consistently great, not just great on one day and horrible on the next day. They're great all the time, okay? Because they've got their mindset to the point that they can do this and that they can achieve whatever they put their minds to. I think that's an important factor. Whether you're an Olympian or you just want to be a professional in any sport, you need to do that as well. The other thing is, now, we're dealing with people that basically, I'm sure you've seen this when you were at the Olympics, okay? There's some people that are down to earth and are really, really nice. But I'm sure you also saw people there that basically were not as nice to you as you would like them to be. Not that you'd mention anybody. I do not want you to mention anybody, okay? But tell me what that's like when you're sitting there and you're in awe of somebody and you go over to try to talk to them and they're like, they just totally blow you off. I mean, what is that like? Because you got different times, different people at the Olympics that are competing. What's that like, and how would you handle that when it happens?
I think I did notice things, dynamics like that. And I think what they teach you and like what I've learned over time is that you shouldn't personalize things. Like, just assume that that person has a different way of approaching the world and how they interact with people, and just try to assume that it has nothing to do with you. It doesn't mean that I'm not worthy of being spoken to and acknowledged. That's just that person and how they choose to show up in the world. And I think you're going to find a lot of times your attention is going to be based on the negative interactions that you have, but I'm sure there's so many more positive interactions that you have that you aren't paying as much close attention to because you're probably focusing on the one negative interaction that you had. But for me, I think I like to approach people from like a down-to-earth perspective. I just think the world's a lot easier that way. Like no need to make it harder.
Yeah, it's true. You know, when I was playing sports, especially in baseball, I noticed that a lot of people were focused. And when they're in their focus and basically they turn everybody off, but at the same time, they get like, they don't want you in their face. They're better than you, okay? And they have to be. That's how they have to think, that I'm better than you.
Yeah.
That I'm going, like, for example, with pitchers, when you go up to the plate, yeah, we don't think about, oh, I'm going to strike out. We think, okay, throw me that pitch that I'm going to hit and I'm going to really do. So it really is a thought of, I'm focused, don't bother me, leave me alone. And yet you don't want to take it personally, because if you do, that throws your game off as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, everybody has a different way of doing things. Like, some people like to talk during competitions, others don't. Some people don't like to interact with anyone during a competition. I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, I will talk to people, but it won't be excessively. But I won't be mean to anyone. I won't cut anyone off. I'll just let them know, hey, like, I just would like to focus right now. So everybody has their own style of how they like to compete, how they like to engage with people, depending on the environment or the situation. And it's really all okay. You just have to not personalize it and do what works for you.
That's pretty cool. That's good advice. Okay, so last question. And this has never happened to me, unless it was a fake type of a medal ceremony. What was it like to get the bronze medal? You're hanging out up there. You got the bronze medal. What was that? What's it like to get those medals that you got and just know that you were one of the best that was out there?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I want to talk about the Commonwealth Games, because that was my first international medal.
Sure.
And that medal meant so much to me. I know I got a gold at the African Games, but the Commonwealth Games meant, that bronze meant so much more to me, because I was seated as last. I came into that competition the youngest person, and I had the lowest throw compared to my peers, like everyone else I was competing against. So sure. It wasn't anticipated that I would be a medalist at that competition. But I really just went in there with the attitude of I'm here to compete. Competition did not start off well as I'd like, but I just kept going, and it was there, and I saw it through till the end, and I ended up by the fifth round moving all the way up to third. And
wow.
It was just such a wonderful experience because my teammate had actually won gold. I had won bronze, and that was the first time that we had ever had, first of all, we'd never had a gold medalist.
Okay.
Nigeria has never had a gold medalist at the Commonwealth Games. And on top of that, they'd never had two medalists at the Commonwealth Games in that event. So we really made history that day. And it was also great just being able to see that coming in there ranked as what I was, that I was still able to medal.
Well, that's great.
It was just such a great experience. It meant a lot to me.
Well, that's great. Listen, thank you so much for being on with us. We really appreciate it. That about wraps it up for Live on Tape. And we will talk to you again next week.